If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, May 17th, 2022. I'm Tim Geddes and I'm thrilled to be joined with the Rogue One, Gary Whitta.
Tim, before the show, you and I were just talking about how much fun it is when you and I host together. We always have a good time.
It's always the best. And here's the thing. I love my job so much because I find myself anytime I'm doing Kinda Funny Games Daily, no matter who I'm with, I'm always excited to be doing the show with them. Like, I feel like the show format allows us to have so many different kind of partnerships. Like, Gary, you're mostly the most dialed in one. Like, I feel like you get stuck with Greg, unfortunately, the most often, right? It's only when he's gone that you get the luxury of doing the show with someone like me or Bless or Janet or Tam. But I get to just bounce around to do the show with everyone. So it always feels like this little thrill, you know.
I'm like, yeah, oh, shit, like, who do I get today? It's like a potluck every time you host. Like, who am I going to get this time? And like, there's not a bad Tim and someone else combo, right? Like,
that's
pretty
what
much
I'm saying.
You fit well with everybody.
I love it. I love it. I feel like everyone fits well with everyone, but I do think that I got a little that Tim. There's something about me. You know what I mean?
There
I don't
definitely
know what it
is,
but I'm a good second fiddle. But yes, exactly. There definitely is, Gary. I love you so much. Hey, before we even get into the show and stuff, you just showed me something super exciting. So I want to give you your little pimpage moment.
Oh, yeah. Also, just before the show, it occurred to me this morning, 1 week from today, my Batman comic, the first issue of an 8-part series, Batman Fortress, will be in all good comic stores May 24th. I have DC just sent me my copies. I got the main one here. This is the one that will be easiest to find. And I have both, let me see, these are gorgeous. I have both variant covers as well. So there's two variant covers
that
you can look out for as well. I just posted the first stuff from it, the first kind of panels and dialogue from it, and on my Twitter feed if you want to go check it out. But this will be in all good comic stores, and presumably, I don't know exactly how, but I imagine you'll be able to get like a digital version of it from digital outlets 1 week from today, May 24th. So I'm very excited about that.
Extremely cool. I can't wait to read it. I've been getting back into comics a lot recently, Gary. So this is an exciting time for me.
Well, I will hook you up, Tim, with some
copies. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. But hey, enough about that for now. We have to wait a whole week for that. Right now, we are talking about all the video game news that you need to know, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Of course, you could watch it live on Twitch each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames, or you can watch later on roosterteeth.com or youtube.com/kindafunnygames. If you wanted to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games Daily, and we will be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad free and get the exclusive post show that we do each and every day, you got to go to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members get the show ad free along with that post show that I was talking about earlier. Some housekeeping for you. Speaking of Patreon people, today we're recording a very special episode of the Kinda Funny Games cast at 3:15 Pacific. It's going to be me, Andy, Blessing, and Jeff Grubb joining us. We're going to be talking about what 2023 is going to look like in video games after this week's delays, Gary. So many 2022 games pushed to 2023. Is it about to be the most insane year ever, or are we just going to get a repeat and everything's going to get delayed again? We're going to have a great conversation about that. And also, live right now on youtube.com/kindafunny, on the screencast side of things, we just recorded Kendrick Lamar, Mr. Morale, and the Big Steppers review. You can check that out. It's live right now. Also, our Top Gun Maverick spoiler-free review is up now. Everyone's loving it. I haven't seen it yet. I cannot wait to see it. A couple more weeks for that. And a little preview of some screencast stuff that crosses over with the video game thing. Later this week, Snowbike Mike will be giving his full Halo season review on the Kinda Funny screencast. Today, we are brought to you by Maple Story and Lumen Skin, but I'll tell you about that later. Shout out to our Patreon producers, Anonymous and Fargo Brady. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 4.5 stories today.
A baker's dozen.
So here's the thing. The half story is actually what I'm calling the zero story. It's a story we already covered yesterday, but I feel like we didn't have our best and brightest on it in terms of the subject matter. Of course, I'm talking about Fall Guys. And of course, we got Gary Whitta. Gary, what's your take on all the Fall Guys news from yesterday?
Yeah, I'm excited to have the opportunity to come in and talk about it. The big Fall Guys announcement live stream was exactly the same time as your show yesterday, right? So it was, the news was kind of coming in hot, and some of the bigger announcements are actually on the back end of it. So understand why you weren't able to kind of go into it in any kind of depth yesterday. And I probably am the biggest Fall Guys fan in the Kind of Funny's family. So I'm glad to be able to talk about it. My daughter and I both watched the announcement yesterday. We spent the past, you know, week kind of like guessing what it was going to be, and we kind of mostly had it. I think most of the predictions and guesses were kind of right. There were some things that people didn't get exactly right. But listen, I think this is big news. Finally coming to the remaining platforms that it hasn't been on. It's coming to Xbox. It's coming to Nintendo Switch, which I think will be the really big one. Finally able to kind of play Fall Guys on the go, handheld, and that's going to be great. And of course, free to play. Which is obviously between coming into new platforms and going free to play, it's clearly going to open Fall Guys up to like a whole new, massive new audience. It's interesting, you know, the whole old dead game thing has been kind of dogging Fall Guys for a while. When it first came out a while ago, a couple of years ago, obviously it was massive, right? Fall Guys was like the game. It was very much in the zeitgeist. Everyone was playing it. And then it kind of fell off a little bit, and it kind of fell out of vogue, and other games came along as you know, tends to happen. But I think Fall Guys is going to undergo a big, big renaissance between going free to play and bringing all those Xbox and especially those Nintendo Switch players into the mix. I think you're going to see Fall Guys coming back starting June 21st in a big way. And I'm excited because I still love it. I love Fall Guys. My daughter loves it. We play it together. We still stream it on my Twitch channel sometimes. It's still a ton of fun. It's still a game where if I just want to have fun for like 10, 15 minutes, I'll pick it up, do a few rounds. I love that Fall Guys is always there for me. And I'm very, very excited about it now finally coming to, I think, a much wider audience.
Would you say that your playing of it has fallen off at all recently?
My what? Sorry?
Has your gameplay time with Fall Guys, like, has it went down in the last couple of months? Or are you still dedicating the same amount?
Oh, no, I mean, even I don't. I mean, again, it's like everyone else. When it first came out, I was obsessed with it. I was playing in like Fall Guys tournaments. I actually placed, I was a semifinal in a professional esports tournament thing. It was an invitational thing that a friend of mine did called Fall Mania. You know, I did my Fall Guys talk show for a while. Like, it was Fall Guys all, you know, all the time, 24/7. And again, like, even like really big fans of the game like me, like, it's hard to sustain playing a game. Like, I don't think there's any game that I played, like, I could say, oh yeah, 2 years later, I'm playing as much as I was like in the first month. Every game kind of falls off a little bit. But I recently have kind of just been getting back into it. I don't know why. My daughter, I think, has been excited about playing it. I got it running on the Steam Deck, and she's been really excited about just playing it on the go. And so she's super excited about the Nintendo Switch version being able to play it handheld. But yeah, we have been kind of getting back into it more recently, working our way through the Season 6 season pass. Excited for Season 7. That was one of the other announcements. Kind of a big, like Olympic Stadium sports kind of theme is going to be the theme for Season 7. And then the big thing, they kind of held this right to the end. They did a one more thing, kind of Steve Jobs moment. And my daughter screamed when she saw this, because this is literally the one thing that she's been asking for the most. Level designer. You'll now be able to. I mean, this is under construction. This is probably a way out. Maybe later this year or early next. But you will finally be able to design and build your own Fall Guys levels with a special like construction set that they're going to add to the game. So cool. I think Fall Guys is going to have like a 2.0 moment here, seriously, where like so many new people are going to come to it. Because don't forget, it has always been limited to PC and PlayStation owners. All those Xbox gamers, all those Nintendo Switch gamers that might have been interested in it have not had access to it. And now they're not only going to get access to it, it's going to be free. So I think you're going to see a flood, a ton of new players coming to the game, which is going to be great.
A couple ignorant questions on my part. Is it going to be crossplay between?
Yeah, it, I mean, it is already. It's already crossplay and cross progression because Epic Games bought it, right? You now have to have an Epic Games account to play Fall Guys. But once you log in with the Epic Games account, you know, so, and that's how crossplay usually works, right? You got to have an Ubisoft or EA account or whatever. Once you log in via that, you're good across all platforms. So now you're going to be good. Right now, if I play on PC and I get then go play on my PlayStation, that character is going to cross over. If you're on PlayStation, I'm on PC, we can play together. But that's going to extend now to Xbox and Nintendo Switch owners as well. Cross-platform, cross-progression across all platforms. So it's wonderful. I mean, I love it.
Incredible. And combine that with free-to-play and all that, man. recipe for success here.
I wish the world, man.
Like Fall Guys was a moment for me that I had a lot of fun with, but I think that I kind of stopped when everyone else did, if not even like a little earlier. And I'm excited about it because I think that it is such a valuable gameplay style. And I do think that a lot of the announcements made yesterday are just only in its favor, and only like this is the type of game that should be everywhere and should be free and should be kind of just supported by players more than anything.
I think it's the right time in the game's life cycle, you know, for it to make this move. Now that Mediatonic are owned by Epic Games, they can afford to, you know, experiment with going to free to play in a different monetization model. There were some questions on the game. It was very kind of rah-rah, you know, Austin Creed, and everyone was like, yeah, this is great. And it was like an official thing. So it was all very like promotional and very hypey. They didn't go into a ton of detail. There's some questions that came out, but they didn't answer, like, well, if it's free to play now, how do you plan to monetize it? You know, they do sell DLC packs, cosmetics, things like that. But if it's going free to play, you can probably expect like more microtransactions to seep into the model. They didn't really speak to that other than to say that it sounds like there's going to be a premium version of a season pass. Like you'll still get a regular season pass for free every season, but much like it's similar to kind of Halo Infinite, there's a premium battle pass that you'll be able to buy. They didn't talk about how much that is going to cost. They didn't talk about other monetization. Will you be able to buy you know, they have their own version of like V-Bucks. Will you be able to buy those now? Like what other kind of monetization options might they be bringing in to, you know, mitigate the fact that, you know, it's free to play, like the base game is going to be free. They also very specifically mentioned on the PC, they never said like, oh, the PC version. They also always said the Epic Game Store version. I don't know. I didn't do enough research to kind of dig into this, but I think it's very likely that the Steam version of the game is going to go away. Like currently you can still get Fall Guys on Steam.
We read through that yesterday somewhere, I think on the site, is that the Steam version is going to be delisted if you want to continue playing on Steam. If you already have that, you have to have it updated and already downloaded.
Right.
But yeah, I think from here on out, or maybe starting June 21st when it goes free for all and onto those other platforms, I think that's when you're going
to
see
it. From Epic's point of view, it makes sense. It's another way to get people over to the Epic Game Store. I for me, it's just all, again, we don't have enough details. I would like to know more about how much is that premium season pass going to cost? What other monetization options, you know, what is it going to get microtransaction-y? I think they will probably try to avoid that. Again, Epic now is obviously sitting on a mountain of infinite money. They can probably afford, you know, to run Fall Guys at a loss for a while, even if they want to, just, you know, because they can. But it'll be interesting to see when a game goes free to play. You always ask, yeah, but it's never completely free. Like how are you going to be asking us to pay for this in other ways? They did go into a lot of detail there, but it's basically it's all good. Like the player base has always been there. People say dead game, and that's kind of become a joke that follows the game around. But I can still log onto that game at any time of the day and be matched up with 59 other players almost immediately. It's not like the lobbies are empty. There's still tons and tons of people playing it, but I think if anything now, it's gonna be massive with, again, how many Nintendo Switch players have been waiting to play this. Being able to play this on the go, on your handheld, is gonna be massive. I can tell you just from playing it on the Steam Deck, there's a little bit of work you have to do on the Steam Deck to kind of get it working because it's not fully compatible with Epic Anti-Cheat. But once you get it working and you're playing Fall Guys like in your hand, it's such a cool experience. And again, my daughter's super excited about that. I think this is really, again, as a big Fall Guys fan, I'm super, super hyped because I think this is going to make Fall Guys, I think it's going to put it back in the zeitgeist to make it cool again as the new platforms open up, free to play. Just there's a whole new audience that's going to discover the game, and I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I also think that in terms of the monetization stuff, like I wouldn't be too concerned because as we've seen with Epic nowadays, when it comes to these type of games, like they have a plan in place, like with Fortnite and with Rocket League, like they have their systems that people understand and don't seem too egregious. And it kind of seems dialed into a science at this point. So I imagine they're just going to apply that formula to Fall Guys and whatever other games they end up kind of supporting with the same type of like platform mindset as opposed to individual SKUs and all of that. But hey, we'll have to wait and see. Let's move
one,
on. To-
sorry, just oh, one final note on that, because this is why I'm so proud of my daughter. Is like she's a proper gamer now. She's almost 10 years old. One of the things she was excited about was, I said, hey, there'll be all these new people to play with. And she said, yeah, and they'll all be noobs. And they won't know that I can push them into the slime. Like she's already thinking about how she's going to grief all these noobs. She is a proper gamer.
That is fantastic. You raised them right, Gary. Story number one, Take-Two and Rockstar sales update. We got some insane numbers for y'all. Grand Theft Auto, the series, Gary Whatta, has sold 375 million copies. $375 million.
Oh, you know what? I should have done a spit take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You want to do it again?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay. Rewind.
Okay. Story number one, take two in Rockstar sales update. The Grand Theft Auto series has sold 375 million.
What? How many?
Absolutely insane. 375 million, Gary.
That's absolutely insane.
Now, the more insane number, though, is the fact that Grand Theft Auto 5 makes up 165 million of those copies. Just GTA 5 is 165 million of the 375 million total of one of the greatest selling video game franchises of all time. And also, Gary, God bless you. You committed, and that was beautiful.
I'll clean that up later.
I know.
I have to go back and watch that, like, because,
that was,
you know,
in water.
There is an art. There is an art to the spit take. There are good ones. I think that's my first time actually doing one live on camera. I'll have to go back and watch and see how well that was executed. But I'm glad we did it.
Yeah.
We were just talking about all the great gifts that come out of Kind of Funny. I'm sure that'll be there's another one for you. There's one for Corey Cudney to go to work on.
Yeah. I will say, Greg Miller, best spitter in the entire world.
Oh, he does it as well? He does a good spit take?
He does a good Hollywood spit take. Like, it's impressive.
Yeah. It is absolutely
And I wonder if that's dedicated. I wonder if that's due to his years of backyard wrestling and, like,
100%.
Being who he is. 165 million units, Tim, of one of the games in the franchise out of 375 million units is 45% of the entire sales.
That is the thing, man, to really kind of talk about the ridiculous numbers that were the scale of all of this, right? Like, how has a single video game sold 165 million copies? Think about that. Think about the amount of platforms it's on. Like, that number is so astronomical compared to any video game sales number that we're ever talking about. Like, we talk about some of the biggest successes of all time, things like Mario Kart, right? We talk about how many that thing has sold, and that's in, like, we're talking about 40 million, and that is one of the most crazy success stories ever. 165 million, and still, it's still going to keep rising. Guess what? Next year, we're going to check in, and it's going to be even higher.
Well, so Greg, Tim, I'm so used to hosting with Greg, forgive me. Let me ask you this, Tim, what's behind that number? What is it about GTA 5 that it has put up a number that ridiculous? There's something, obviously, we all know it's a great game, right? Everyone loves GTA 5, but there's a bunch of great games there. What is it about this one that has put it so astronomically beyond every other game in terms of sales?
I mean, I think it's the online, right? It's like, they really achieved the dream that we all had. Like, I remember being a middle school, high school aged kid during the trilogy from GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas. And that was an annual event where it was like, it was the equivalent to the hype going into Endgame, one of those type of Marvel movies in the, like, 2020s, had the same type of effect back then when it was just the new GTA release. Like, 3 set the world on fire. It changed video games. And then every year, it's like, what are we going to get? And when they followed up with Vice City, followed up with San Andreas, and then the hype leading into 4, there was that moment where things shifted from being on the PS2 and Xbox and GameCube era to the next gen of 360 PS3, which was really when online gaming kind of found its foothold. Like, sure, Halo 2 and all that kind of ushered it in with Xbox Live on the first Xbox generation, but Call of Duty Modern Warfare really revolutionized and normalized that when you're talking about video games, there is a high percentage you're talking about playing an online first-person shooter with your friends, right? And I think that it was during that era that we were starting to get GTA 4, and people were talking, like, can you imagine a GTA online? Can you imagine just being in this sandbox world that was revolutionized on the PS2 era with GTA 3, but with your friends? It's not just you single player running around in a tank blowing things up. It's you and your friends doing it together. And GTA 5 kind of knocked it out of the park when it came to just the single player portion of the game. It launched with online that didn't really work, and everyone's kind of like, all right, well, that was a fail. And then after a year, they fixed all those problems and then just kept doubling down, tripling down, adding more game modes. And GTA Online has just kind of expanded to be way wilder than my imagination back playing San Andreas of what GTA Online could have ever been. That's why the success is there, is they achieved the dream.
It's crazy because it's not like GTA Online is is without its problems, right? It's had issues of, like, you know, people complain about the load times have typically been bad. There is a lot of toxicity, particularly on the PC side. You've got hackers, you all have all kinds of other problems. It's not without its problems. And yet, there's so much to do, right? It is this incredible sandbox. And like and Rockstar has supported it to such an incredible degree. Like, they're still, right, you know, recently, right, there was that big story DLC. They just keep building out and building out and building out that experience. It's amazing. What I'm hoping is, as we go into GTA 6 and the next evolution of GTA Online, is that Rockstar can push that online experience closer to what is being done in the mod community with, like, kind of the role-playing servers, the no-pixel stuff, where people are fully voicing their characters, they're fully inhabiting that world, they're building their own social structures and ecosystems, and, like, it really is becoming almost more like a Second Life, you know, almost like a metaverse-type experience where Los Santos is just the backdrop for you to do anything you want to do. I would love to see the game become, like, more immersive and take it to that next level. But clearly what they're doing right now is working for them. Again, people complain and bitch and moan about Rockstar and GTA Online all the time. Sometimes, you know, with a lot of validity. Again, the load times and some of the toxicity, there's issues there. And yet, clearly, you look at the numbers that the game has put up over the years. Yes, the re-releases, or, you know, the game has now straddled basically, what, three different generations, right? GTA 5 was originally a PS3 and a 360 game. We're now in the PS5 Series X generation, and it just re-released again, and they just kind of rebooted GTA Online again. So it's still as fresh as it ever was. There is something about, there's some secret sauce there that again, like, you talk about, okay, 35, 40 million for Mario Kart, Animal Crossing, these games are putting out astronomical numbers, but it's not like GTA 5 is just a little bit above those. It's like orders of magnitude above those. So there is something, they tapped into something that has taken this to a completely other level. And of course it bodes very well for GTA 6 and where they go next, because they're building off of such a phenomenally strong foundation. I think the only game that has the potential, I think it will take years to do it. Again, it took three generations to get to these kind of numbers. But the only game that has, I think, the potential to take that crown from GTA 5 over the next, you know, 10, 15 years will be GTA 6.
Yeah, and I think that is not a silly thing to say. I mean, it's wild to think that next year is going to be a decade of GTA 5. Like, that, yeah, is... That is,
so get ready for that 10th anniversary special re-release edition as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah, let's pump up those numbers. But, you know, speaking of just the success of Rockstar, where it's not just Grand Theft Auto, right? Moving on to Red Dead Redemption. Red Dead 2, 44 million copies sold. That is, again, an astronomical number. And the Red Dead Redemption series as a whole at 67 million. Moving on from that, Borderlands 3 at 15 million. And one of the highlight stories here that would make Greg Miller really happy, WWE 2K22 is the best first month sales in U.S. history of a WWE 2K game. So that's good, because this has been the return to form for WWE games. They've been really, really bad the last couple of years. And this one, for the most part, got it right. So it's kind of good to see them. They took the year off and made some adjustments, and I hope that they continue to go down that path, because the best case scenario is they continue to make great games. They make the games better, and then those games sell well. So that motivates them to continue making the games well, right? So they're tapping into something here, but it is just absolutely insane.
It's nuts. I wonder what Skyrim's at, because that's the only other game I can think of that has that same kind of legacy story as GTA 5. You know, it came out of the 360 PS3 generation, so three generations old, and it's another one where there's been, like, so many different kind of re-releases and remasters. And again, it doesn't have the same online back end that GTA Online has. But Skyrim's got to have a crazy number behind it as well, if you add up all the different re-releases.
So looking at it, last reported that I can find is Skyrim is at 30 million.
It's not bad.
Yeah, bringing it in at number 20, highest selling game of all time. Right now, number one is Minecraft at 238 million.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Number two being GTA 5. But yeah, man, and there's like a sharp decline after that. Like, it goes from 165 million sold to Tetris at 100. And then Wii Sports.
See, I would have thought Tetris much higher when you think about all the different SKUs and all the different releases.
Yeah,
over the years.
I don't know. Who knows how?
And that's been around since the '80s. I think if you could actually get a proper accounting of all the different sales of all the different versions of Tetris since like 1988, like 87, 88, when that game first came out. Across, you know, every, it's been on every platform on the planet, right? And there's been so many different versions of it. I think Tetris probably is way bigger than that number suggests.
Man, yeah. Nuts numbers, all of these. What does this mean for GTA 6? We actually had a reader write in, "Don't poke the pigeonhole." Writes in and says, "When are we getting GTA 6?
Never.
I mean, that's what a question for the ages, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you, I imagine you have seen it. There's like a YouTube, there's a kind of funny YouTube short going around of you guys responding, reacting to some kind of live thing where the Rockstar logo comes up and then they show the city in the background and you guys are like, "Oh, this is," and then you realize it's actually another GTA 5 remaster. I fucking hate it when they, I still will never forgive Sony for the way they did that. Remember they did that first PS5 showcase and they opened it with a Rockstar logo and a picture of a city and everyone lost their shit?
That's what it was.
Yeah, that's the clip that they were reacting to. And
fuck, honestly, they knew they were fucking with us when they did that. Yeah. They knew how people were going to react.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Oh my God. But it's just going to make it all the sweeter for when GTA 6 really does drop. I mean, and they did, at least they did that one official statement, right, where they confirmed, yes, we are working on it. So
yeah,
it's out. It is my number one anticipated game. If I could fast forward into the future of the release date of any game, real or imagined, that could be in the future, it would be GTA 6.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's one of the most ridiculous things to even try to predict, because it could be any time. It could be, I mean, I don't think it's going to be any time very, very soon, but I feel like 2024, the end of it, is the earliest we might see it. But
yeah,
2030 is the latest. Any of those, anything in between, yeah, totally could happen. But I'm still holding out my prediction that it's going to be GTA VI for the 6, and then they're going to add City, and it's going to be GTA Vice City with the VI.
Is that what you want? You want to go back to Vice City?
I think that'd be cool. I think it's inevitable that whatever GTA 6 is going to be, I think is going to be worldwide. I don't think it's just going to be one place. I think it's going to be a much more interconnected world that maybe you can travel between Los Santos and Vice City. And
Like they do with San Andreas, where you did three different cities.
Yeah, like the OG San Andreas, exactly. Yeah. But a little bit more and like kind of expanded over time with like big season expansions. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if GTA 6... is like the final GTA, like where they try to make it more of a platform and like do what they've been trying to do with GTA Online, but not with a game that is 10 years old, you know,
right,
doing with something that's proper next gen, especially as we're in this moment right now where we are finally getting to PS5 and Xbox Series X exclusive type titles. So we'll see. But moving on to story number two. Techland is developing a AAA open world fantasy action RPG with former CD Projekt Red staff. This comes from Sal Romano at Kotaku. Techland is developing a AAA open world action RPG set in a fantasy environment with former CD Projekt Red staff. "We're happy with what we've accomplished with the Dying Light franchise so far," says Techland CEO. "Moreover, our journey with Dying Light 2 Stay Human has only just begun, as we plan to support this game for at least 5 years with its scope and size matching, if not exceeding what we have provided our community with during post-launch support for its predecessor. At the same time, our ambition is to introduce a brand new IP that is vastly different from what we have been doing for the past several years. We want to create a fully next-gen experience, a new fantasy epic set in a sprawling open world fueled by the skills and experience we have gained as a team over the years, infused with new ideas, passion, and creativity. While we cannot share any more details about this project now, we're all truly invested in it and looking forward to showing it to gamers when the time is right." And then they have a breakdown of what the team for this fantasy RPG looks like. Includes the narrative director, who previously worked on CD Projekt Red's Witcher 2 and Witcher 3, plus its DLC. A narrative lead who previously worked with CD Projekt Red on Witcher 2, Witcher 3, and its DLC as well. And then in the last few months, the team was also joined by the open world director from Cyberpunk and Witcher 3, the creative director who previously worked on Prince of Persia Sands of Time and Mad Max for Warner Brothers. We had the lead game designer previously associated with Arkane Studios from Deathloop, and the lead animator from Guerrilla Games from Horizon Zero Dawn and Frozen Wilds, as well as lead interface designer from People Can Fly. kind of a baller ass team.
Yeah, the Dying Light games have never really done that much for me. I've never really gotten into this most recent game. I know got very I was like halfway excited about it, and then when the reviews came out, it was very, everyone I spoke to was like, "Eh." And so I never really bothered with it. But yeah, but you know, it's like you said, it's a very impressive team. Part of what put me off Dying Light is I'm a little bit zombied out, Tim. There's so many zombie games out there. I kind of feel like it's starting to, you know, the impact of each one is starting to get thinned out a little bit by just how many there are, and it's just getting a little bit tiresome for me. Every game is zombie.
We get it, Gary. You did Walking Dead. We can move on.
I mean, I'm part of the problem, right? And so it's if it's not Days Gone, it's Dying Light or something else. There's just so many games out there that, you know, you're running around trying not to get bitten by a zombie. If they're doing something different. That's the thing. I get really bored by the fact that like so many games have the same setting. It's either a generic kind of Tolkien-esque fantasy or a generic sci-fi setting or more post-apocalyptic zombie stuff. Particularly the post-apocalypse thing, I think, is like, it's done. We should move on. Like, find something else. And so I will, you know, for me, like the world and the setting and the immersion and the storytelling and the narrative, the world building, the mythology, that's always such a big part of how invested I feel like I can get in the game. So if they can bring something new and different in terms of the world that we're going to explore, and it's not just more zombies or more, you know, guys running around in suits of armor or whatever, then I might be, I'll wait and see, but I'm open-minded.
Yeah. I think this is exciting because, you know, they've proven they have the stuff when it comes to Dying Light 1. We talk about a lot as being one of the first big spring games that kind of changed video game release schedule strategy. The last generation, and their support of the game has been so impressive over the last, 7 years at this point. And it seems like they're planning to do the same with Dying Light 2. So they got a lot of talent over there. And I think adding the list of names that I went through here, it's like that they're really building something special, and they are doing something different here. Like this open world RPG not being a zombie game, it being like something that is outside of their wheelhouse from what we know and expect from them, but applying kind of the learnings that they have had from the past two games on the Dying Light side, I think is really interesting. And I also think that it's exciting to me that we're in a new era of video games where this blog post ends with them saying Techland's now hiring as it prepares to significantly grow the development team. We're in this era where there are teams out there that are announcing projects in this fashion where it's not the crazy CG reveal or whatever. It's just kind of like, hey, we're working on a big AAA game, but we're trying to talk about it now so that we can get the right talent involved and hired on to build it out so that people are excited about it. And hopefully in like 4 years, you are seeing this at a Summer Game Fest press conference, and you know the kind of work that went into getting it to where you're going when you're watching this vertical slice as AAA games just get bigger and bigger and bigger. I think that I've always been a fan of games being able to be a bunch of different things. Like I think that there needs to be Kojima type titles that are, it is just a CG reveal trailer that doesn't have gameplay and we're talking about it for 5 years. At the same time, I think there needs to be games that are shown and they're like, hey, it's out today. Like having that kind of variation is, I think, a good thing. But I think that we've been lacking this type of early on transparency when it comes to AAA game development. And I'm pleased to be seeing as much of it now like this. And there's other like new teams coming up that they're kind of these like Avengers style super teams of people that left other companies. Like what's the one I'm thinking of right now? That's No Moon.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like things like that where it's like Scott Lowe and them.
Yeah, that's correct. That's No Moon is the name of
it. It's like I think it's cool that there are these teams kind of forming up from the ashes of, or like not even ashes, but of just like from people that clearly like learned a lot from these other giant studios, and so now them kind of like do their own thing, I think is really cool. And to be talking about games this way and this open this early, I think is a valuable thing for the industry.
From a consumer, I generally prefer to wait until they've got something to show. I mean, we just talked about this earlier, right? But Rockstar said, yeah, we're working on GTA 6. And they just said that without any spectacle, right? It wasn't like there was a cinematic or any kind of reveal. They just, yeah, we're working on it. And we see this more and more now, companies saying, yep, we're going to start, like CD Projekt Red just said not too long ago, right? We're going to work on, yes, we are starting work on a new game in the Witcher universe. We've got nothing to show you yet, but we are doing it. And, you know, there's if you're super excited about that universe, that's good to know. From my point of view, I'm just like, great. Come back to me when you've got something to show me. I generally prefer to wait until there's something to see. But to your point, Tim, it's interesting that a lot of these pre-announcements now are being made almost more as like recruitment announcements rather than like hype announcements. Like, hey, we're building a game. We need people to come work with us. We were just talking the other day, recently on the show about how there's so much expansion going on in the game business right now. The game business is very kind of healthy economically. Teams are growing, more projects. Everyone's recruiting. Everyone's hiring. It's very much a seller's market in the game development labor market. If you're a game developer with a skill set, you've got a lot of options in front of you right now. Everybody wants you to come work with them as they're scaling up and building, adding new projects to their portfolio, building bigger and more ambitious projects. And that, like you said, that's part of it now. Sometimes it'll be very, you'll see like Naughty Dog will say, hey, look, we have a bunch of jobs that we're hiring on. It's for this kind of a game. And they'll give you just barely enough for like a prospective candidate to go, oh, I could be helpful with that kind of a project. But sometimes it is, now it's more like this, where you've got the Dying Light developers going, we're working on this big thing and it's going to be this and it's going to be that. And we need people to come work with us. And so it's, like I said, it's much about recruitment as it is about hype these days.
Absolutely. Before we get to the next story, I wanted to let you know that you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let's tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Lumen. If your skincare routine is basically you washing your face in the shower with that one shower gel that you've been using since high school, then it's time to level up the skincare game. Thanks to Lumen, you can drop that bottle of 3-in-1 and start using products that actually take care of your face. With Lumen, you get the highest quality products. All their products aim to help with those stubborn acne scars, under eye dark circles, wrinkles, sun damage, dry skin, oily skin. Gia has been using the charcoal face wash and charcoal face scrub, and she feels so fresh, so clean afterward. She has dry skin, so especially during the winter, it's nice to have that hydration and exfoliation. Also, she's a big fan of the really subtle citrus smell. All you have to do is take a 2-minute quiz on their website, and they'll tell you exactly which routine is best for you based on your skincare needs. Level up your skincare game with Lumen Skin today. You can go to lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. That's lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. lumenskin.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to MapleStory for sponsoring this episode. Are you tired of being judged based on the way you look? MapleStory is too. Because while it may look cute and cuddly, this is a deeply hardcore MMORPG. MapleStory is full of vast, colorful lands and a ferocious array of towering monsters. And don't get us started about damage. MapleStory will have you dealing billions with each swing of your Fafnir battle cleaver as you battle boss after epic boss, and you can customize your Mapler your way. MapleStory has 40 plus jobs and thousands of weapons, outfits, hats, armor sets, and mounts for you to take on your journey, from the Lionheart battle bracers to vicious lollipop wands. And you know I love a lollipop wand. There's a ton to see and do in this picturesque world, and with 18 years of content to sink your Genesis weapon into, there will always be a new adventure around the corner. MapleStory is ready to go. Are you? You can go to MapleStory.com to check out the game and play for free. That's free, guys. Come on. MapleStory.com. Story number three. There was a showcase this morning, Gary, from 505 Games, their spring 2022 showcase. And Kat Bailey from IGN gave us a little rundown. This was one of those first showcases of the summer season where we're like, okay, we're about to get into Naughty 3, Summer Game Fest, all of this. Maybe there's a Nintendo thing. Maybe there's a Sony thing. There's definitely an Xbox thing. But now everyone's like, okay, cool. We're gonna get on here too. We're going to latch on and see what happens. This happened at 6 a.m. for us, so we're like, are we gonna cover it? I don't think it's worth it. And after all said and done, Gary, looking at what they announced, I think we made the right call. Iodin Chronicle 100 Heroes was the main attraction heading into today's 505 Games Spring 2022 showcase, but the anticipated JRPG was more or less absent from the morning's event. Instead, the focus was on Among the Trolls, Stray Blade, Miyasami Chronicles, and Iodin Chronicle Rising, the last of which was just recently released. Among the Trolls is a supernatural first-person survival game set among Finland's deep forests, developed by Forbidden Studios, a team comprised of former Skyrim, Fallout 4, and Vampire the Masquerade developers. It's in some ways as much Firewatch as it is Don't Starve. The second game shown during 505 Showcase was Stray Blade, a Souls-like that pairs an anthropologist with the mischievous Boji. A
anthropologist?
Gremlin-like... No, is it that? There's no L here. Unless they just misspelled it. I don't know.
I don't think anthropologist is a thing.
Yeah, what the hell is an anthropologist? I'm going to chalk this one up to a typo.
I think they meant to say anthropologist.
It's an anthropologist with the mischievous Boji, a gremlin-like creature that can cast spells and provide reviving support if the main character goes down. Then Iodine Chronicle 100 Heroes continues to be nowhere to be seen following its delay into 2023. Instead, Iodine Chronicle Rising was showcased one more time for fans who haven't yet picked up the town-building spinoff set in the Iodine Chronicle world. The showcase's final game was a teaser for Miyasama Chronicles, a brief trailer featuring a boy, his robot, and what seems to be an extra-dimensional force. It's being developed by the Bearded Ladies, the student behind Mutant Year Zero. Interesting. Kind of seems like a weird set of collection of games to have a showcase. Like, I still stand by, like, these showcases need one kind of tentpole event to then have the random game announcements and the other things people are working on. And it seems like this kind of lacked it, especially as Kat kind of explains that the thing everyone was looking for was Iodine Chronicles 100 Heroes, and it wasn't there. So I don't know. It kind of bums me out that showcases are still at a point in 2022 that they're not getting it. They're not getting the memo. But I don't know. What's your take?
I mean, you weren't wrong about this being an up and down mixed bag news day, were you? It's like I was excited about Fall Guys. I was excited about the GTA stuff, even though, you know, just sales news. It's not like there's anything new coming down the pipe. And then, man, we went off a cliff, didn't we? Now we're talking about a showcase that, you know, again, a lot of times when you see these showcases, even like the big ones, like that last PlayStation showcase, everyone was like, why'd you bother? You know? So I always kind of feel like if you're going to call it a showcase, if you're going to put on a show, make sure that what you have is, again, even if it's just one thing, I think you can call a showcase a win if people come away talking about one thing, right? You just need one thing to create buzz. And sometimes it's the thing you lead with, right? Sometimes it is your tent pole, as you say, Tim, but sometimes it's the surprise thing, right? It's like, oh, that, you know, there was like that one little weird indie game they showed. That's the one that's got everyone talking. As long as you can create some buzz around one thing, I think it's worth doing. But if you've got a bunch of, like, you know, whatever stuff, like even like putting it all together, like, oh, maybe if we play all these games together and do a showcase out of them, it'll add up to something. I don't know. I think we've seen before that a showcase can sometimes be less than the sum of its parts.
Absolutely. And I, for some reason, am still holding out hope that this summer we're going to see a little bit more restraint and a little bit more refinement when it comes to the output of these showcases. But I'll tell you what, we're off to a very bad start with that. Moving on to story number four. This one's an interesting one. This is something that could turn into nothing, Gary, but it could turn into a pretty exciting future. Microsoft patent could verify physical games for Xbox Digital Library. This comes from Andrew McPhillips at Game Rant. The two most recent console generations have seen a market shift away from physical disc-based games and towards digital downloads straight onto the console. While there are those that remain adamantly in favor of physical games, the option is becoming less and less substantial. The disc for many modern games like Halo Infinite don't even hold the entire game and require a digital download and an online connection to play. This current trend for online connection requirements in digital games was first forecasted by Microsoft at its showcase reveal for the Xbox One back in 2013, where the reaction was so overwhelmingly negative that Microsoft backtracked many of its features announced for the Xbox One. However, over time, many of these features have since crept into the home consoles. Digital games have become so prevalent that both Xbox and PlayStation's next-gen consoles have versions without disc drive. These digital-only options are cheaper, but do leave some players with a few worries. However, Microsoft has now filed a patent for a system which may eliminate one of those worries for Xbox Series S buyers. The patent describes a system that allows an external disc drive to authenticate an Xbox game and allow the player access to digital versions of that game through the Xbox Series S Game Store. It's unknown whether the patent would allow players to redeem a digital version of the game to add permanently to their digital library, or whether the patent would simply be the basis for an external disc drive Xbox Series S players could purchase if they wanted to play backwards compatible Xbox One games. It would seem unlikely that players would be allowed to duplicate their copy of a game if there were any chance the disc could then be sold and duplicated again, though perhaps the patent could identify whether the disc had been validated before, like with the codes for redeeming digital games through the Xbox Game Store. The patent description also seems to suggest that an Xbox One could be linked with the Xbox Series S and used as an external disk drive for authenticating the game, but whether they could be linked wirelessly or would require a connection is unclear. What do you think?
I think that the whole, you know, transition from physical discs to more of an online digital ecosystem, you know, there's a lot of reasons to like it. I haven't bought a disc in a long time. I've got my PlayStation 5 and my Xbox Series X. I honestly can't even, they could have both have shipped with Duff disc drives for all I know. I've never put a disc in them to try them. I honestly don't know if they work. I would have preferred that Microsoft had a discless option for the Series X the same way they have for the current PS5, because I'm just not a disc guy anymore. I don't want to have to get up off the couch and swap discs anytime I want to play a game. One of the nice things about digital, right, is you can just like jump around and, you know, the games are all there. But we know there are a lot of negatives as well, right? We just saw with the Xbox online crash that they had, right? Where suddenly a bunch of your games wouldn't work, even though the disc is in the drive. That's not good. I don't like being made to feel like a criminal every time I play my Nintendo Switch. Most of my Nintendo Switch games are digital, but some of them we do have on disc. But it still insists on doing this check, right? It makes me wait for 5 seconds checking to see if the game can be played. Fuck you. The game's the fucking disc is the cartridge is in the drive. You know it's in there because you're showing it to me in my library. What are you checking? That I've fucking stolen it or something? What the fuck? I don't like it. I think if the fucking disc is in the drive, that's the beginning and the end of it.
We want to make sure. What are you checking? Little thing that like when you lick it, it tastes bad. We want to make sure it's the correct thing.
It drives me crazy. If the disc is in the drive, that's all she wrote. What more do you need to know? Now, I understand, Tim, what you just explained about how the verification thing needs to have some security around it, because otherwise, right, I could just bring all my disc collection over to your house. You scan all my discs. They all get verified on your system. And then you could just keep cloning discs, you know, and get and validate in that online copy. But, I think as long as the disc is in the drive, that's the end of the situation. And I don't, you know, every time you talk about that Xbox One launch, I get those douche chills, because man, was that bad. You remember how bad that was? Oh, yeah. That sharing thing. You've got 30 days to share it or whatever it was. It was awful. And of course, ended up creating one of the great memes of all time with Adam Boyes. Oh my God, just having so much fun with it. And I think these big companies right now, the three major ones, certainly Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, are all trying to figure out a way to make it easy for you to share your games, for you to, you know, move discs around, for you to be able to play, but at the same time deal with all the different ways that can be exploited if security isn't tight enough, right? They're trying to find a happy medium, and maybe there isn't one. Like, you're always going to piss someone off on one side of the equation, right? Either the security is so tight that it's an irritation for people who have a legitimate copy of the game, or it's not tight enough that people are going to exploit it and start stealing games and sharing games that they really shouldn't be doing.
That's the make or break for consoles. Yeah. Like the PSP, one of the biggest reasons of its failure was how easy that thing was to pirate. Like the right. amount of games that would leak months before they were even out, they were just easily accessible. It's like, it was not a challenge at all. You download that thing and just play it, and it's just on your system. Like right. that screwed the PSP. And like even the Wii, which was obviously such a major success, like it hit a major hurdle at some point where software was just kind of just being found on the internet, like commonly from everyone. So it's like in this era where they are actually selling digital versions of the games, and that is just normalized, they need to come up with systems that actually work. It reminds me of like the early days of PC, right? With like, you needed a serial number, like you needed the actual code to like authenticate it, because all it was just a EXE file being passed around on the fucking internet.
I'm old enough to remember code wheels, and you look up this page in the manual and what's the eighth word on the fifth line and all this kind of stuff that they would, you know, all the different copy protection. They used to have like literally a little plastic dongle that you'd plug into the back of your computer to verify. I think part of the problem, Tim, is that we're still in this very transitional age, right? Where physical media is still very much a thing, right? The disk drives are still in the consoles. Don't forget, PC left this behind a long time ago. I guarantee you, 99% of like gaming PCs that are out there right now don't even have a physical disk drive in them anymore, because we're past that. PC games don't even really ship as physical copies anymore. Steam and Epic Games Store, it's all fully digital. So we've already moved over complete. That transition is over. The consoles are still in the middle of that transition, right? Physical discs are still very much in the mainstream, but online sales are still, I can't remember exactly what the exact ratio is, but there's still, it's not like one is niche anymore. They're both very, very still like big parts of the ecosystem and the economics of how these games are bought and sold. But I think it's going to become less of a problem as we inevitably will. The console market transitions more to just a purely digital ecosystem. But my prediction, and you know, clip this for when I turn out to be wrong, you know, 7 or 8 years from now, is that the PlayStation 6 and whatever the next Xbox is called just won't be a disc drive option. I think 10 years from now, physical games will just be gone. Maybe they'll exist in the way that like vinyl exists now, or like, you know, the limited run games people do their thing. But I think that physical games are increasingly on their way to becoming a niche. And with all of the caveats and all of the problems, online authentication, oh, you can't play this game you definitely own because you're not online right now, even though it's a single player game with no multiplayer functionality. If we can't do the online check, sorry, you can't play it. All of those things are going to continue to dog us for a while. I just think that the issue that I'm having with, you should see me, Tim. You think it was bad just a minute ago. See me when I'm actually doing it, when I'm trying to play Nintendo Switch Sports or something where the cartridge is in the drive, is in the system. And it's saying, let me just make sure that you haven't come by this, you know, illegitimately. Let's make sure you actually own this game. I fucking hate it. Like, you know it's there. I have a physical copy of it. You know it's there. You're reading data off of it right now. What are you trying to check for? What the fuck more do you need to know if the disc is in the drive? But when there's no longer discs in drives, that will go away. And I do think that. I don't know. What do you think, Tim? Do you think the next generation of consoles will have disc drives, or do you think we'll be past it by then?
I think that there's a couple X factors that we would need to know to really be able to predict that. I am with you that it is inevitable that they will go away just like they did on PCs. But I think that that would require, like you were talking about, the economics to really shift and change. As long as places like Best Buy and GameStop are as popular as they are, and I know that they've been on a downward slope in terms of buying video games, but downward slope is still bringing in hundreds of millions in sales a year for these games. And until physical storefronts can find a way to actually sell digital things in a way that people don't think is stupid, I think that they will always have to do it, because they'd be like just missing out on so much money. And I think that there will come a point that that's not true anymore. And I imagine it will be in the next decade. I just think it is still unknown factor on when we're actually going to get these next gen consoles. But I do think that because of the state of the pandemic and everything kind of making this the initial launch of this generation a little bit more spread out and delayed over a couple of years, as opposed to before, where I think we would have been hit the ground running a lot quicker into next gen. Like, I think that people often are in the chat or in the comments being like, when are they going to stop calling it next gen? And it's like, the answer is I'm going to stop calling it next gen when there doesn't feel like there has to be a distinction between last gen and this gen. We're still in that moment, though. Like, normally that would go away within like 6 months of the consoles launching. But because these things aren't as readily available as they used to be, I still think we're in this like weird crossover phase. And until we're getting the majority of video games being made exclusively for those systems, it is still somewhere in that weird kind of nebulous zone.
I think it's a matter of when, not if. You talk about like the big retailers and how much, you know, it's nice. It's nice to just go to a store and browse, right? We all enjoy doing that. But I think that video games are on the same inevitable track the music was on and the movies are in the middle of right now, right? Like, you know, you may be as well. I'm certainly old enough to remember going to Tower Records, and it was fun to kind of browse around, you know, and pick up a CD and bring it home or whatever, or Virgin Megastore when I was a kid, the record stores that I used to go to. That's a thing of the past now. That's gone. You know, now you go to Amoeba Records and browse through, you know, kind of old, you know, vinyls, and there's still, people are still physically making them, but you know, physical record stores, record retailers are gone. They're gone. And movies are in the middle of that right now. I have a big collection of Blu-rays. I love my movies. I used to collect Blu-rays and 4K discs all the time. I haven't bought a physical disc in a very, very long time because I've completely transitioned over to, and again, now I know that cinephiles and other people, they want to have their physical copy. They'll tell you that the compression and the bit rates and stuff are always better on a physical disc, although that gap is closing all the time. They like having just knowing that the disc is on their shelf and not having to worry about, oh, for some reason it, you know, it's failing the online check, I don't really own it anymore or whatever. I understand all of that. It's nice to have security knowing that the disc is on your shelf, but those people are becoming fewer and fewer every day. So you just look at the track that these, any media that has both a physical and an online option, right? Music came and gone. That story's over. Physical's gone in any meaningful way. Movies are in the middle of it right now as we transition to a streaming and digital economy. Blu-ray sales, 4K discs, all those sales are going in the toilet. Will increasingly become just a thing for audiophiles and cineasts. And games are right behind it. Games will inevitably follow. That'll be the last domino to fall.
Gary, I pre-ordered a 4K Blu-ray yesterday.
What was it, Tim?
You'd be proud of me. It was Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Hell yeah, Tim!
I'm very excited.
I can't wait for that to drop on digital. I'm so excited to watch it again. Yeah, what a great movie.
No, I am the guy you're talking about, and I know that I am. Like, and it is sad for me. I talk about this on a lot of different shows. Like, I buy every movie on 4K Blu-ray just because I like having it. I like having that quality. It's the best way to get the like lossless audio, and that is the defining feature. But you saying we're in the middle of it with movies, I don't think we are. I think that we're past that. I think that physical movies are a thing of the past, and they are at this point as silly of a concept as vinyl is, where it's like, it's this.
Oh, so you think the physical to digital transition in movies is farther along?
I think it's over. I think, okay. I think that it is a niche thing. I mean, it's not a thing. I know it's a niche thing at this point. Like, where do you buy 4K Blu-rays? That's a question. The answer is Best Buy. Go to a Best Buy and look at the 4K Blu-ray section. It's the saddest thing in the world. It's not even a section.
So
anymore.
Sad.
In the last 6 months, it literally
I haven't looked at a physical retailer in a long time.
They're just like end caps. It's just one little thing of like, hey, 4K Blu-ray releases. Yeah. And like, then there's like more leftover Friends DVD collections than there is new 4K movies.
This is my point. Physical music, right? Vinyl and CDs has now become a niche enthusiast market. To your point, Tim, movies are basically almost there as well. My only argument is that games are, why wouldn't games inevitably be the third chapter in that story? Physical games will always be around, but it'll be a niche thing for enthusiasts, and the mainstream will be fully digital.
I am that enthusiast in every single way. Like, I'm just a physical person when it comes to that stuff. Like, I still buy CDs. But again, I know that I'm the niche. I've been the niche since I was in high school, and my friends are like, what the fuck you do? And I'm like, I just like having this shit. I rip my own CDs, I do all that stuff. I'm crazy like that, and I get that. The difference between movies and games, though, is the file size. And I think that is the one big hurdle that needs to get figured out. And I think it's figuring itself out. Every year you start looking at things, and there's multiple ways you have to look about it. It's the hard drive space itself, which is getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. We did have a reset period of SSDs going from hard drives to solid state drives. So we're kind of, again, starting from not zero, but like, we have to work our way back up to SSDs being large enough and cheap enough to just not even think about it in the way that, like, I remember when 256 gigabyte hard drives were hundreds of dollars. Nowadays, for $100, you can get 10 terabytes or whatever the hell it is. Like,
that's the thing.
Absolute nonsense.
That's the other side of the equation, Tim. When I said that there's an argument that the PlayStation 6 and the next Xbox won't have a physical disk drive, what they will have instead is like a 5 or a 10 terabyte SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the other bottleneck is the
internet
is the internet, and we mm-hmm. know that that's getting better as well. More and more fiber out there. You know, it's getting. You know, I have a gig connection. I can download a game like that. Wait until we get to 10 gigs in a decade from now. when we're looking at that next generation. So it's, yeah, it's there. And I know that the physical diehard people out there don't like it, and they'll always have their arguments against it, but it is as inevitable as the tides. Somebody gave me a CD the other day. It was like they had made, it was like they had their own band and said, "Oh, listen, here's my music. Here's a CD." And I took it, you know, graciously, but in the back of my head, I'm thinking, the fuck am I even supposed to do? Like, do I even have anything at home that can even play this? I don't know. Like, if I put an audio CD in my PlayStation 5 or my Series X, will it play it? I don't even fucking know. But I don't have a dedicated like audio CD player anymore. I haven't for years. Remember when we used to, you must have had this, right? You must have had like a CD rack, right? Like a CD tower with all your CDs on it. Do you really?
Hell yeah,
oh, dude, I'm a fucking nerd. Are you kidding me? Like, y'all need to see like, the dumb shit.
But again, though, no, Tim, you are the enthusiast.
I am right there
with Tim, because like I still have an all-in-one CD record and I think tape player that still works.
Oh my god. Yeah.
See, but so here's the thing. Like, I know we're going long in this, but I fucking love this stuff. But like, we're in a really interesting moment right now that hurts me as the person that I am, as the enthusiast, where about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, we hit a point where CD quality is inferior to streaming quality. Like, Tidal did this major push into the hi-fi.
That used to be the argument,
stuff.
Right? And that's flipped.
And now that like everyone else, like Spotify is the one lagging right now, but they will they were supposed to by the end of last year. We'll see when they fucking do it. But like Apple Music right now, for no extra charge, just Apple Music, no matter what tier you have of Apple Music, you can get high res, lossless, all this crazy stuff. And it is higher, better quality than ripping your own CDs. And that to me, I'm like, damn, like I just lost.
And that's happening now for movies as well. Yes, it is. I saw a thing the other day where they did a similar comparison, right? They took a 4K Blu-ray and they compared it. They did like I don't remember what the website was, but it was a Digital Foundry type destination for movies. They took a 4K Blu-ray and they compared it to like the 4K Apple TV download and then like the version of it that was streaming off of like Disney Plus or whatever site that had it. And their conclusion was, after doing a pretty forensic analysis, was unless you're like one of these pixel counters on AVS forums of 2010 Vision, who's like really, really, really nitpicking, 99.9% of the people cannot tell the difference anymore. Like there's no argument to be made but this is superior quality. Like you cannot tell the difference anymore.
See, but here's where it gets even more interesting, and I promise this will be the last thing I say about this, is what you're probably talking about is this really unfortunate, interesting place we are right now with licensing for the different technologies, things like Dolby Vision and Atmos and the different HDR types and IMAX, where we're finally at a point, and it fucking breaks my heart, but the MCU movies that are coming out, the 4K Blu-ray discs, and at this point in time, the sound quality of a Blu-ray disc is unrivaled on streaming. And I don't think we're going to get to that lossless point anytime soon because of the data sizes and all that stuff. Like undeniably listening to any movie on the 4K disc in this room is demonstrably better than watching it on Disney Plus or any streaming service. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. However, the visual side of it, there's still a lot of problems and like, it's not perfect, but the IMAX formats that Disney Plus offers for like the Marvel movies is inherently a better image quality than what they're offering on their 4K Blu-ray discs. And certain things look better because there's no artifacting and there's no like actual streaming that has to happen. But in terms of what is actually being shown, it's better on the streaming service. And that's not available on these fucking $30 discs that I'm buying.
Don't forget also, Tim, when you put in a 4K, unless something's changed in the last couple of years, you still have to sit through 2 minutes of bullshit before you can even press play. With a streaming movie, you're off to the races immediately.
Yeah, that's all complicated.
You have to stick through all the FBI bullshit and, my God, come on. I just want to watch the fucking movie.
Yeah, show me the fucking movie. Anyways, thank you all for hanging out for our nerd talk. We also talk about video games here. You can stay tuned to our post show that we're about to do. But for everyone else, I love you all. Goodbye.